You're listening to the Donor Growth Podcast, forward-looking conversations for those who believe that donor growth is possible.
Every week, we'll explore a thought-provoking topic to help build deeper relationships with more of your donors. We are your hosts, Luis Diaz
and Mike Dirksen. Now let's get into it.
All right, so Luis, I've got good news, I've got bad news, and I've got just like interesting news. Where should we start?
Interesting.
Okay, so interesting news. I was looking at the stats for our podcast. Do you know, first of all, do you have any relatives that live in Georgia?
Georgia, the U.S. state.
Yeah, the U.S. state. Yeah.
No, but I know a good amount of people there, I think. I used to live in the state just up north in Tennessee. So.
Okay, so you used to live in Tennessee. You know some people in Georgia. It doesn't sound like you know all that many because it took you a while to sort of think about this. All right, where do you think we have the most listens from? What city do the most amount of people listen to the Donor Growth Podcast?
I mean, I don't know. Decathlon, Georgia.
It's Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
That
you
is.
Gave me a tip there.
It's a donor growth capital. The most amount of people listen to Atlanta, Georgia. I wasn't sure if you had like maybe a lot of family and you just like spam your family with the podcast every time. You're like, listen to the episode. And that's how we've racked up so many listens in Georgia. But
I mean, I did that with like the first five business ideas, but then they started to tune me out after, you know, I told them to subscribe to my t-shirt, to my CD Baby Facebook page and all those other things.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. After CD Baby, they're like, Spanish CD Baby is where I cut the line. That's it. All right. So that's the interesting news is Atlanta, Georgia. We got a lot of listeners there. Shout out to anybody listening from Atlanta, Georgia. Maybe we should take a road trip down there.
Folks. Yeah. We love you. We love that you're part of the country. Everything's about peaches. Maybe we have to do a peach episode.
Donor growth roadshow. All right. That's the interesting news. Not that the other isn't interesting either, but bad news or good news?
Bad.
Okay, our listeners in the Czech Republic have dropped off the map. They are.
Come on.
They have stopped listening. It's. I don't know if it's something we said or did, but they haven't listened in a long time. So I think
that will be our second stop on the roadshow, kind of a Hail Mary approach.
All right, so that's the bad news. And here's the good news, though. Lots of people from other countries are listening. So United States, Canada, and the UK, that's kind of obvious because those are mature fundraising markets. It would make sense that fundraisers from those countries are listening to fundraising podcasts. So those are the top three. Number four is Brazil. So we've got a decent amount of people listening to the podcast in Brazil. So if you're listening and you're in Brazil, we're not opposed to an invite to the beach. I mean, Atlanta is nice, but Brazil, that's top tier.
Hey, but we're hitting all the right places. This is great. We should do another podcast.
Right. And interestingly enough, Romania is on the upswing. So more and more people from Romania are listening to the podcast.
That's great. Everybody note that Mike hasn't given any absolute numbers. We're in this fantastic position where if we add like one listener in a country, that increases our audience by 100%, sometimes even an infinite percent.
I will say this. The podcast has something like, I don't know, Luis, 4,000 subscribers on LinkedIn, the Donor Growth newsletter. Okay. That translates to a tiny fraction of people who actually listen to the podcast consistently. So if you ever look at vanity metrics, And you think like, man, that person's got a lot of followers. That doesn't mean that they've got that many engaged followers. And maybe there's a fundraising lesson in there. Maybe your 100,000 record CRM with peer-to-peer records only has a fraction of people who are actually fully bought in. So maybe there's something there.
Totally. That was a little bit of the impetus behind GDRP, my understanding. I wonder how that's turning out when they really had to take out all those people from their solicitation lists.
Yeah.
And you see that in higher ed a whole lot. You have lots of alums, but are they engaged constituents? Are they your true fans, like Mike likes to call them? You know, a lot of the time, no.
Right.
The answer.
Okay. So does this make you feel good? Makes me feel good. We're going international. There's people from all over the world listening.
I mean, every movement started this way, Mike. What? Look, I'm focusing on two things. One is that I just really enjoy it. So I enjoy the time we spend together. I feel like it has opened the door to lots of great relationships, including ours. Number two is that even though podcast metrics are hard to track, I noticed that it's creating deep relationships. So I'll hear from people who say, I listen to you every week. And I think, you know, and then they'll share their thoughts about something. And this happens at least once or twice per week. So if you are on the other side of this podcast today, please do reach out. Drop Mike a note, drop me a note. You wouldn't maybe know this, but we screenshot your notes and send them to each other. And we're all excited and we do happy that. It's kind of sad in a way. You're like teenagers. So yeah, we're truly eager to get to know you. So those two things are really what keeps me going.
Yeah, the last podcast about does fundraising have a future? Would you suggest that your kids go into fundraising? That seemed to generate a lot of feedback in our DMs, and some people emailed us about it. That seemed to generate a bit of conversation. But yeah, the stats are, you're right, they're kind of nebulous and really kind of worthless. But at the end of the day, it makes me feel good that people are listening and that we're going international. And I'll tell you what, it makes me want to level up the podcast and put effort into it. And I know how that sounds. It's not that we haven't been putting effort into it. That is not meant in any disrespectful way to you, the listener. Like, we haven't been trying to provide value, because we have. But this is definitely something that Lewis and I do on a Thursday morning when we roll out of bed and we record this, because we each have other responsibility. This is not our full-time gig, not even close to it. And in fact, Lewis also has another sort of podcast, which is his live LinkedIn. And then I've got another podcast, which is our Build Good podcast. So we have separate sort of content streams we put a lot of thought and effort into as well. And this was an experiment, and I'd say it's going well, and it makes me want to level up a little bit.
Let's do it. Mike, so everybody who's there, send us a note. How should we level up? What have you seen in other newsletters, podcasts that you really liked, that you thought, hey, these guys should have a section on blah? So, and we'll be thinking about it too. Maybe you'll start seeing different things. Hopefully you think they're a little bit better.
Yeah, I think our next step is a research assistant.
I'm working on it. In fact, the next time somebody sees our newsletter on LinkedIn, they're going to see a little bit more content. So all right. I had a call about that yesterday, Mike, with Rinku, our research assistant candidate. You know, I'd say we're both pretty knowledgeable. We're both pretty hardworking, but there are lots of knowledgeable, hardworking people out there, and of having a dose of humility. So speed is something where I feel we can differentiate a little bit. So yeah, things may be happening. Not to say that poor ChatGPT doesn't deserve some more attention. And I think that's what you want to talk about today, Mike.
Speaking of speed, when we first started putting together the show notes for today's episode, it was like 2 weeks ago, and everything we're about to talk about was true. Since then, OpenAI moves fast, and people working with OpenAI and the API, they move fast. So since then, there's a whole new GPT thing you need to know about called Auto GPTs, but we won't get into that today. We will stick to talking about ChatGPT. And I know what you might be thinking. You're talking about ChatGPT again, and everyone's talking about it. And truthfully, Lewis, I don't want to become the fundraising podcast that is just about ChatGPT, but I've thought about this a great deal.
Okay.
I don't see any way out of this. If you're a nonprofit and you're not talking about using ChatGPT, I think that's
it boggles the mind. I'm just gonna say it, Mike. It boggles the mind. I was at a conference for social media professionals at universities held by an esteemed organization that houses every educational institution in the world. There was not one single session about ChatGPT. And I was like, a little bit in your camp. Maybe they felt it was a topic that was boring already, but man, this is going to impact lives here in this group.
Yeah. And I think it's risky if you're not thinking about it. And if you're not playing around, if you're not at least playing around a little bit and being like, well, let's see what this is. Let's just start to play around a little bit. I think that's a risky choice, because like we just said, things are moving really, really fast. And that is super scary. It can also be very exciting. It can be both. But this is something I just don't see how there's going to be a future where this isn't going to be a large part of what we do or what we talk about or how we organize our work.
Yeah. And it's going to make great new things possible that we didn't even know, or we kind of knew, but it could happen. But it was just a lot of work. And now suddenly it's not going to be so much work.
Yeah. So we'll table the auto GPT discussion for another podcast. But short story is that we kind of screwed up with AI. Any ethicist and sort of person who knows about AI for years has been saying, you know, when you're developing AI, there's just a few things you don't want to do. Like, you don't want to let the AI learn how to code necessarily. You don't want to have the AI learn about humans, because once it knows about like how humans work, it can start to manipulate humans. And most of the time, you don't really want the AI connected to like a live internet connection. So we've now failed at all three of those. We've sailed right past those warnings. And auto GPTs are now AI agents connected to the internet who can do any mission you assign them to, and they can spawn new AI agents to help them in that mission. And they just shut one down called Chaos GPT because somebody programmed it to destroy humanity. And the thing was starting to have some ideas that involved dividing people on Twitter, which is interesting.
Oh, well, yeah, everything's been invented already. I think we're pretty good at destroying humanity ourselves. Thank you so much. But it's moving quickly. I mean, yep. Honestly, I don't think there's, I mean, is there a whole lot of reason to be alarmist about this? You know, I see that we've also been living with lots of dangers. So there's a little bit of press-driven exaggeration, right? We live with lots of dangers daily.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting time to be alive, to be a professional, and to be in the nonprofit field for sure.
So let's talk about use cases for ChatGPT. Fine. ChatGPT. Okay, fine. I'm going to learn about it. It might be important. Tell me, Lewis and Mike, tell me, what can I actually do with this thing? Like, show me how it can really help me. So we're going to go into some use cases that are not content creation, because we've talked about content creation, because ChatGPT.
And I actually don't think, sorry, Mike, I don't think that's the best use case. I think this episode is going to be the best one ever.
Yeah, I agree. Content creation is the one that gets all the shine. Like, people are like, oh, you can write thank you notes, you can write appeals, you can write emails. And yes, you can. That's probably the most boring use case of ChatGPT. And it'll probably get a lot better. So I'm assuming many of us will be using it for that in the future. At this point, I think it's just okay. And we talked about Chad, GPT, and commodity content in the previous episode. But I want to get into five use cases that I think are really interesting and are not about writing.
I'm all in. I'm going to share some experiments too that I've been running. So number one, summarizing. You said summarize meetings. I think the general use case for summarizing things or text is really powerful. And it's actually quite good at it, right? What have you seen?
Yeah, this is probably one of the biggest superpowers of ChatGPT, is that it's very good at processing a large amount of information and then synthesizing it. So the reason I put down summarize meetings is I'm thinking fundraising context specific, like, how can this help you in your shop? So Caitlin on our team does this. She will send her Otter AI to a Zoom with her. So she might have a meeting with the team. And then Otter AI is just this plugin for Zoom that hangs out in there and transcribes the conversation. Then she'll send the transcript of the conversation to ChatGPT and ask it to summarize the meeting. And then she gets a 10-point summary of the meeting. So 1 hour, 2 hour meeting, whatever, broken down into the 10 main points. Very, very helpful, because we used to pay people to sit in those meetings and take notes, and after the meeting, send a summary to everyone. And that is, you no longer have to do that.
Yeah. Other summarization ideas for people. You're given a whole binder, or whatever the digital equivalent of a binder is, of language. Maybe it's research from your program area. Maybe it's everybody's ideas on website copy. Maybe it's survey responses. I'm doing a lot of this right now. And it's kind of all free text. It's kind of chaotic. Reading through it, then finding the common threads, or identifying kind of the language that speaks to, using the right language for, based on that group of text. And it's really easy just to plug it into ChatGPT and say, hey, could you summarize this? Could you give me the top five common themes that you're seeing here? Could you write something else using this information and this language and tone that you see in all of this? And I don't know that we've talked about mirroring on the podcast, Mike. Maybe we should. But I find that one of the most effective ways to communicate is when you're mirroring the language of the other person. Mm-hmm. So if somebody asks you to write a letter and you know what their style is, if you write a letter in their style, they're going to love it. I'm not talking about copying word for word. So ChatGPT is great at this. So yeah, summarization and all these kind of ways to turn a lot of information into a, you know, a little bit of information or the opposite. I think there's a joke somewhere about, you know, you send me your ChatGPT summary and then I ask ChatGPT to expand it into an article.
Yeah. The reason why this works very well is A, it's just the strength of ChatGPT is to take a lot of information and summarize it. But B, you're not asking it to create anything from scratch. So sometimes you might ask ChatGPT a question and it's factually wrong, the information. It's not quite accurate. Because it took a snapshot of the internet 2 years ago and it's using all that information to come up with an answer. But here, it's not coming up with any new information. It is taking the thing that you're giving it, the content, it's just working with that content and analyzing it and helping you make sense of it.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, have you used ChatGPT 4 versus 3.5?
I have the upgrade, the $20 per month version. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I wondered if you'd notice a difference between those two. You know, thinking that in fundraising, kind of where most of us pride ourselves in our use of the written word, and ChatGPT-4 is supposed to be more insightful, better at reasoning.
I don't know that I've noticed a remarkable difference in the content being any better. Mm-hmm. It's nice to be able to feed larger pieces of input. Okay. That's probably the main benefit, which is you can give it more information at the front end. If you're using ChatGPT-3 or the free one, what you have to is you have to chunk it. And I still do that in 4 if it's too long, mm-hmm. but you have to say, hey, I'm going to give you a lot of information. Are you ready? Yes. Okay. Here's part 1. Mm-hmm. Remember it. Okay. Here's part 2. Remember it. Here's part 3. Remember it. So you just have to keep chunking it up and asking it to remember.
Hey, there's a website that does that for you. Sometimes you don't know how big you should make each chunk. It's called ChatGPT Splitter, and it actually splits big chunks of text for you into smaller chunks. Mm-hmm.
Leave it to Lewis to know about the tool that does that. You know every single tool on the internet. You're the first person I text when I'm like, hey, I need to do something. Is there a tool for this?
But you know, somebody else caught on your kind of joke that I'm going to wake up one day and just tend to the robots and then just, you know, close the shop at night after having talked to the robots all day. I heard that from somebody else, Mike. I think it's starting to be a thing.
All right. Number 2 kind of relates to number 1, but it's actually like qualitative sentiment analysis. So qualitative analysis is usually hard to evaluate, and because you get all this messy data back from donors, you ask them questions in an email, in a survey, in an open field form, even on the phone.
Contact reports.
You transcribe it. Yeah. So you get all this messy data. You read through it and you try to pick out the common themes, and you're often making a gut decision, which is fine, but that's sort of how we deal with qualitative data. You make a word cloud. There are some other tools that do some sentiment analysis. But generally speaking, because you're human, you're going to be a little bit biased by the most negative comments that you read. It's a little bit like when you look at the reviews of something, it can have 1,000 good reviews. And then at the top, there's 3 bad ones. And it's going to make you be like, I don't know if this is the right product.
I always click right through to the 1-star reviews.
Yeah.
You're right. But I kind of discount for maybe fake 5-star reviews.
Right. Sure. But, you know, if you got 20 bad responses that were complaining and 100 good ones, and if you read the bad ones first and then the good ones, you're going to have this like anchoring bias of like, there was all these bad ones and they were bad. So you can feed it to ChatGPT. You can be like, hey, I'm going to give you a bunch of donor feedback. This is feedback to an email we sent. First, I'm going to show you the email that we sent. Give it to ChatGPT. Okay, now here I'm going to give you the responses. And you can just ask it, hey, like, summarize this for me. Like, give me a sentiment analysis. What are common themes and topics and threads? And what seems to matter here?
Well, so another bias, which is confirmation bias, which is you're going to only see the ones that you agree with. And the other ones, it's natural, it's human. You're just kind of going to discount them or gloss over them. So you can ask for this information. I don't know if you've tried this, Mike, not only in kind of narrative form, but you can ask it to build a table. So, and then actually maybe tag pieces of text. So if you have like survey, an example is survey responses. For each survey response, add a tag that's either positive or negative based on the sentiment of that response, or tag based on the topic, and you just let ChatGPT come up with the tags, and it just kind of makes them up. Or you tell it, okay, tag based on these four topics that I'm looking for, and then give me the total. What I have found is that when you ask it to do math, it's pretty bad. Like math that involves kind of, you know, write all these tags, put it in a table format, and then count how many of each we have, things like that. That gets it wrong a lot of the time.
Okay. So just like basic math.
Yeah, totally.
The AI is getting basic math wrong.
Well, I mean, because I think that kind of probabilistic approach, the so-called BS generator approach that it takes. Yeah. I don't know how well that, I don't know. I'm not an expert. It just gets it wrong.
Check this out. I'm not going to add it up correctly. I'm going to give you the average of if I added it up. What moves me toward the most center of the bell curve? That's probably the answer that you want for everything.
Or, yeah, you know, ballpark. I'm going to give you a ballpark for everything.
Yeah, it'll get you by on water cooler chat. If you need something to talk about during the water cooler chat, I got you. I got you. Okay, so the third one is kind of related, which is data analysis. The first three are kind of related, which is just like analyzing a lot of different kinds of data.
Yeah.
So almost any large volume of data, including, I mean, have you tried feeding it a donor file with the names removed, just with like donor IDs? Have you tried doing that already?
I've done survey responses. I've tried to feed giving histories, like, you know, date of gift, amount of gift, and say, when do you expect the next gift to come, for instance? And then sometimes I really didn't understand what the thinking was behind it. So I asked, well, what was the reasoning for that? And I, you know, sometimes I agreed, sometimes I didn't. But hey, maybe the AI knows more than I do.
Yeah, so I would put this one squarely in the camp of playing around and experimenting. So I've done the same, like giving history, just like there's like a donor ID, there's a gift date, there's a gift amount. And so you can play around with that. But this is one of the areas ChatGPT will get a lot better at over time. And there's also people who are building all sorts of interesting software tools on top of the GPT rails, so to speak. So they're building a layer on top of ChatGPT, many of them related to exactly this kind of stuff, like data analysis, file analysis, predictive modeling. So, and once we have that and that's more commercialized and like the user experience is super intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to say it, Lewis, all your tutorials on how to use Excel for fundraising may not be as relevant a year from now.
Well, let's talk about that. There's another case that's related to analysis, but it's data cleanup and standardization, which kind of relates to the Excel trainings, because lots of times you get lists of names, and sometimes you get last name, first name, Mr., without the Mr., you get, you know, all types of, and you can't really work with that if you want to do a mail merge, for instance, right? It's impossible. ChatGPT is really good at cleaning that up. Go through this list of names and output only the first name and the last name for each one of them, and it'll do it in an instant, where before you had to kind of do lots of cleaning up.
Yeah. Okay. Use case number four, scheduling and planning. Shout out to Ann Murphy. She's the one who put me onto this use case. So ChatGPT can help you organize your planning. And so here's an example that she used. She used to travel to the Bay Area a lot to visit donors. So she put together this example, how she would have used ChatGPT now, which is just like saying, hey, I'm traveling to the Bay Area to visit with donors. I need to organize my schedule to optimize the travel time. Please tell me the best order of my visits to San Mateo, Oakland, Marin County, the city, and San Jose. And then ChatGPT said, hey, you know, based on average traffic times, seems like this is your best order. And then she said, all right, thanks. Now put that into a table and indicate the exact travel time between each stop, assuming an average amount of traffic. I'll want to start and end my day in San Mateo, and I want to spend 90 minutes at each destination. So I want to spend at least, you know, 60 minutes with a donor, and you need 30 minutes to kind of whatever, get there early and then now indicate what time I will arrive at each destination and update the table at 30 minutes of buffer between each stop. So before that would have taken you, I mean, this probably takes you 2 minutes to get this itinerary done. And it would have taken you a bit of thinking about, like, you would have had to like look up all the travel time, and then you would have had to do a little bit of math. So this saves a bit of time.
Yeah, for sure. I do get a little bit nervous because of what we just spoke about, that ChatGPT isn't so good at math. ChatGPT isn't actually going to Google Maps and looking up the travel distances. It's reading like all of Reddit and all the conversations saying, hey, I went from San Francisco to San Mateo and it was horrible and it took me 5 hours. And, you know, yeah. So it's reading all of that. And then it's kind of, you know, putting together an answer that sounds coherent. Yeah. I definitely double check it. It sounds very promising. I just wouldn't trust it with my actual travel itinerary.
Yeah, you can also get a plugin and connect ChatGPT to the internet, which is what a lot of people are doing. And it is entirely possible. It is not illegal. There's a plugin that allows you to connect ChatGPT to the internet, and some of these answers will be more accurate.
Well, and we haven't mentioned that there's other chat assistants that are widely available, like Bing and Bard from Google. The one from Google actually does look up kind of the Google ecosystem. So anyhow, worth experimenting, but very promising.
Yeah. So you can use this to, I've also asked it in terms of planning. I've also asked it to be like, hey, this is sort of the kind of content I want to put out. And just make me like a content calendar. Just give me a draft content calendar. And it spits out a table. And it's a helpful starting point. Even just the format it used before, I would have been like, how should I make a content calendar? I can Google a bunch of templates and see how people are doing it. But just like small scheduling and planning things. Yeah. Again, Caitlin on our team asked it to do a meal plan for the family based on their dietary preferences and restrictions. Mm-hmm. And it gave her a meal plan. And then she's like, great. But what's the grocery list do I need to... Yeah. And then it gave her a grocery list of what to buy to actually make that meal plan happen. And so there's all these little ways that it can help you to plan stuff.
That's amazing. Did she actually go through and shop the grocery list?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, we need to check in with her. I'm just really worried that she's going to show up for dinner one night and like the eggs are missing.
ChatGPT also does not apologize. If you correct it, it won't say, oh yeah, sorry, I got that wrong. It'll do the thing like your annoying friend does when you correct them. They'll just like move on and like build on top of your new information. And you're like, no, but we
like,
need to...
Like more like improvisational theater. Like the yes and technique.
Last use case, a research assistant. So this can replace, not entirely, it can replace a good chunk of your Googling. So how have you used this for research of this?
Oh my goodness. I've just had long conversations with ChatGPT. I was asking it, we got into a really long one, about how really good consulting firms organize their knowledge, because this is something I'm very interested in, you know, thinking about our own practice, right? Or, you know, our own consulting practice. The model that we have is kind of not so much I'm the expert and you have to go through me for everything, but it's more of we are a support system and here's a resource library and, you know, here are your check-ins and here are the different ways that we support you. And people find that valuable, but going forward, it's going to be really valuable to have that information really well organized. So I was just asking ChatGPT something that I couldn't find on the internet at all. Like, how do really big knowledge firms do this? And then it gave me some really good answers. And I said, okay, so now imagine you're a smaller firm. How would you get started with this? And it gave me some more ideas. So now I have all of that in an email for me to like think through and put a plan together.
Yeah. So I just have ChatGPT bookmarked and I'm trying to force myself every time I want to Google something, I'm trying to force myself to ChatGPT at first. Because I think this is not an original thought, but like the future of search will likely be some sort of chat interface. Like it's probably moving that way where you're looking for answers. You're not looking for an index necessarily of all the websites in the world. Mm-hmm. And unless you're doing research and you go to page 80 of Google trying to find an obscure reference. But for many of the day-to-day use cases, we're just looking for a quick answer.
Yeah.
And so it's been very interesting. And then I've started to, kind of use it as a research assistant. So the other day I had a long chat with ChatGPT about the history of monthly giving. And kind of wanted to see if it could find the first example of monthly giving and what did that look like. And it said, monthly giving really started in the 70s and 80s. And I was like, no, I know for a fact it didn't, right? So I was like, I think there's plenty of examples before then. And it just says, you're correct. Monthly giving as a fundraising practice can actually be traced much further back than the 1970s and 80s. In fact, some historical evidence suggests that regular giving dates back to the Middle Ages, when members of religious groups, orders, would provide regular financial support to their monastery or churches, which that makes sense. That's kind of what I had read in the past, is like it started as a religious, thing mm-hmm. a long, 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 long time ago, like thousands of years, hundreds of years ago. But then it kind of does the thing like, no, you're right. Like it did start back then. However, it wasn't until the 70s and 80s it dug its heels a little bit. But I learned that the Sierra Club launched its monthly giving program in the 1950s and that the American Red Cross began its monthly giving club in the 1920s. Just a bit of a research kind of sort of helpful.
Oh, you learned that from ChatGPT or you learned that elsewhere?
No, from ChatGPT, yeah.
Did you ask for sources? Sometimes I wonder about that. I haven't really gone there yet, right? So I just kind of take it at face value and I know it could be right. I need to check on all the information, but...
Yeah. No, I've never been like, show me your receipts.
Exactly. Prove yourself.
It'll probably say, as a language model, I am not trained to give you links to back any of this up.
And the next paragraph will be, in conclusion, you shouldn't be asking these questions, blah, 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 blah.
All right. You want to wrap this up? You want to put a bow on it? You want to be the human ChatGPT and give a quick summary of all the information we talked about?
I don't know how ChatGPT would do it. I'll just do it the way I would do it. So sorry to disappoint everybody, but we've talked about ChatGPT, how there are interesting use cases beyond content creation that you need to be thinking about. We had a little bit of a conversation about how we think that a lot of our work is going to change because of tools like ChatGPT. And we explored some ways to use it that are not just write me a thank you email. For instance, summarizing meetings are super valuable, great time saver. Qualitative sentiment analysis and data analysis in general. Just feed it some text, ask it to tag it, to reformat it, to transform it in some way. It's really good at this. All of this, ask it to identify trends and topics and patterns. We talked about scheduling and planning, including developing a meal plan, which somebody, which Caitlin on Mike's team did. I said, just really check, double check this before you get on the road. And finally, we talked about research, how you can ask it for things that may be online. I'm going to add a little bit here, Mike, which is to say, but especially for things that are really hard to find online. So if you want to know about the history of an organization when it started, for instance, and it's going to share some thoughts with you. So great research assistant. Again, don't take it at face value. It's a way to get started.
Yeah. Great summary. Shout out to people in Romania, India, Japan, and Spain. Those are all on the rise, but especially Romania. If you're in Atlanta, Georgia, thank you for being a huge donor growth.
Maybe the donor growth hub. Let's pitch the road trip idea. We'll go see you on the other side of that. Come here and do a live consulting. I think we have one scheduled for next week, Mike.
Yeah, we've got somebody from Australia coming on the podcast. We're gonna do a bit of a live consulting session with her on how to grow monthly giving. I'm very excited about that. Yeah, and we are. I don't know. Let us know how we can level up. I've got some ideas, Lewis. We can talk about what all we can do. But if you, the listener, have some ideas, those are a lot more valuable to us than our own.
Absolutely. Catch up with you next week. Thank you for listening to the Donor Growth Podcast, brought to you by the Donor Participation Project and BuildGood.com.
If you found today's episode helpful, please help us by sharing it with a friend, posting about it on LinkedIn, or giving it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, remember that donor growth is possible.